October is National Women's Small Business Month, and we're celebrating all the ladies in the Wabash Valley that are leaders in business and in the community. We applaud these women thanks to Scott College of Business at Indiana State University.
I have the privilege of hanging out with Dr. Deborah Curtis today from Indiana State University. She's the president of ISU. Dr. Curtis, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real privilege.
Yeah, we're really excited. I personally love the Women Mean Business, that I get to meet so many awesome women in our community that are taking charge in leadership roles, and it's really been quite a privilege. To do that.
Great.
So I wanted to get started here. I wanted to kind of point out, so you're only the second ISU grad to be president and the first female president at Indiana State. How proud does that make you? You're part of history, actually, making history.
I'm really thrilled to sit in both of those seats and wear the hats that those bring with it. And interestingly enough, it's been 100 years since another alum was president. So that's the one that I'm really delighted to say. Yeah. We have awesome alumni. I'm so glad that one of them gets to sit in the seat as I do for this period of time. And the first woman, you know, I said to my colleagues coming in 2018, it's about time, isn't it? It's 2018. So, you know, I always say it's not so much to be the first. Let's make sure I'm not the last.
Absolutely. I love that you said that, and so true. And what a legacy that you're starting to leave already. You're making your mark, and we can only hope and assume that you're leading the way for other future women presidents and women in leadership roles at Indiana State.
Well, I'm delighted to say that decades into this career that started for me at Indiana State in higher ed, that's what the PhD did for me. I've seen a tremendous amount of evolution for women's opportunities in those several decades I've been in higher ed. And when I came into higher ed, even as a faculty member, there were far fewer women than men. And I've been delighted to see over these recent years how that's shifted.
And it's only going to get better.
It indeed is. And we see that it's a bit of a wave taking place. And more than excited for me, I'm excited for the young women coming behind chronologically, if you will. They come with a different sense of, I can do this, than many before them had, because they didn't see people ahead of them doing this work.
That is so true. That is so true. They're looking at it from in a different light, I would say.
Absolutely true.
So I wanted to ask you, I can only assume, I noticed that education has played obviously such an important role in your life, first of all, with your own education and now with other children's educations and students. Your husband, Lynn, as well, education has been a big part of your lives. I can only assume the students mean a lot to you. What do your students mean to you?
Well, I will tell you, that's why I got into the work I'm in. And my husband was similar. He was in the K-12 world and retired out as a superintendent. So we've both always been passionate about being a part of and alongside of young people as they evolve and change their lives. At Indiana State, and I knew that as a student here myself, it's a really transformational experience. I was a first generation college goer in my family. So I often say, and we have about 50% of our students at Indiana State are, you don't know what you don't know. For me, in my evolution in higher ed, I was just blessed by having mentors or peers who helped light the way for me. I'm happy to tell you, we are intentional about it now, that we make sure we have systems and programs for first-generation students or perhaps students from low-income families without means to actually help them navigate this process. No one should be kept back from achieving their educational goals because of either dollars or lack of experience in your family. And I'm really happy to tell you we're there now.
And you know, I love that you bring that up, because for so many, you know, young people, and myself included, being that first generation, you know, it's a little scary. It's a little intimidating. You maybe didn't have someone in your family that could talk to you about their experiences because they didn't experience it. So I think it's wonderful you guys have these programs in place now, and still moving forward, you're going to have even more and more as you learn and grow. And we're going to talk about some of those here in a little bit. That's really exciting stuff that's going on.
Well, we're enthused about it as well. It's what keeps us excited and energized every day.
Another thing that I think is important to note, and maybe we don't think about it, but if you really dig down and you think about it, your higher education is probably one of the first major decisions in your life, typically before marriage and children, not always, but that's one of those big decisions in your life, your higher education.
So here's what I'd say about that. And having been a first gen myself, I see this a lot with young people. Somehow there's this perception, there's this big gap between high school and college. And oh my goodness, can I do it? And I remember experiencing that for undergrad. And then I thought there'd be this big gap between undergrad and my master's. And then my master's and oh my goodness, a PhD. And it's really not. It's a fluid path. And I keep calling it lighting the runway for students who don't have someone to help navigate, is to see if we turn those lights on along the runway, you see, it's a flat growing path. Just take those steps into it. It's scary when you don't have someone to help you see where it is. And when you see what it looks like and you know what that next step is, that's when it makes all the difference. And I'm delighted to say that much of what we do provides that lighting of the runway for many young people, particularly young women now.
And it truly is a different path for everyone. It looks a little different for each individual.
Well, that's the exciting part about education, because you think a class comes in, and I'll tell you, you know, this freshman class we welcomed 7% more than last fall's numbers. It has a certain, as a group, enthusiasm we haven't seen in a couple years. Remember, these were high school students who didn't have a normal junior and senior year in high school. They are so fired up. And in turn, I said, it's like, for me, plugging into a wall socket. Right? The energy that comes from them. So classes will have personalities, but we know very clearly every one of those different individuals coming through the door needs a different set of supports. And I'm delighted to say we get very excited about providing those supports to make sure that they stay on that runway.
I love that. And that's a great point. I didn't think about that. They were coming up, you know, during the pandemic. A lot of them didn't have prom, or I mean, there were so many things that they kind of did without. And so now they're more than ready. Is that right?
I'd love to tell you a funny story. I mean, the first week of classes, our vice president for student affairs texted me one night. She said, "You're not going to believe this. We are holding bingo in the student center. We have 500 students who came to play bingo." I mean, that's just an example. You know, they had involvement fairs for student organizations and activities. Huge number of students showing up. They are so ready to get engaged and be a part of what they think this experience is supposed to be.
That is so good to hear. I wanted to take a moment. It was a wonderful conversation. We learned a little bit from Buffy and Andrea. They kind of talked to us about the Be So Bold fundraising campaign. I know you addressed the university this week, and there's something else that you mentioned that we didn't talk about with them that I want to talk about a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about the Indiana State Advantage?
So about a year ago, as we were thinking through and strategically planning for emerging from the pandemic, our thinking went to, what do students in Indiana need to help them say, yes, it's time to get back at it and be involved in charting the rest of your career? And we particularly took a look at the state's needs. Indiana State University has always focused on what the workforce needs were of the state of Indiana. If you look at some of our largest enrolled programs, they're indeed the programs the state needs. And when we looked at that, we thought of three particular foci that we wanted to put out there. Number one was affordability. And so we looked at any resident in Indiana who's earned a 3.0 or better GPA in high school and has financial need. Once their aid is applied, we usually call that Pell eligible, any gap between their aid and the cost of tuition will cover it. We'll cover it so that they can come tuition taken care of and get their feet back on the path. So that was a big piece. A second one, which is who we are. We're all about making sure our students, not just when they graduate, but as they're getting ready, have experiential learning opportunities. It's a bit of an honors college model, but for us, we said, why should only honors students have that experience? I want to be president when I can say every graduate of Indiana State University has had an experiential learning experience beyond the classroom out in the field. So we provided an opportunity with this fall's freshman class to one-time opportunity to apply for up to $3,000 to help them afford an experience like that. It might be study abroad. We find with a lot of our students, the barrier for them is, I can't afford the airline ticket. Well, there you go. Apply for this grant and do that. Or maybe the best internship for me is in Chicago, but how will I live there for 6 weeks? Come apply for this grant. And it gives you that opportunity to go engage, not only beyond the classroom, but beyond the campus. So when you go out as a graduate, you can say, look at the experiences I've had. The third piece for us, which we've had for a little while, but we wanted to lift it up because it matters now more than ever, and it's related to affordability, is if you come in and stay on track, you take your 15 credit hours a semester and earn those credit hours. If for some reason you need more than 4 years, will cover the rest of the credit hours you need to be able to complete. So that's that four-year graduation guarantee. Responsibility on the student's part, but they hear it coming in the door. Get directed, get focused, and you're going to be able to do this.
I love that, and I'm so glad we're talking about this because I think looking back on my college career and now moving forward to my children's future college career, I know that, you know, coming from a, what you would consider, I guess, middle-class family, you know, finance was an issue going into college. It wasn't really feasible or affordable for our family. And to know that, you know, I felt like I had to work a little harder, that maybe it's a little bit more resources out there with the information now than what there was when I was starting. It was a little, you could get to the information, but it was a little more challenging. I feel like you guys have come a long way in providing that. So for the parents listening, you have all this information. Maybe they're hearing this for the first time. They're now intrigued. Hey, there's stuff out there to help. I wanted to send my kid to college. I didn't have the money. What should be their first step to reach out to get this information? Because it is a lot of information. What's the best way to reach out?
So we have a website, the university's website. So it's indstate.edu. Add a slash and put advantage behind that. indstate.edu/advantage, and it goes right to multiple pages on our website that explain these opportunities with additional contact information. We have a newly developed in the last year or two as well call center where people are available to talk to students or families at any time and help them navigate. And then the other part I love to say is come visit us.
Yeah.
You cannot put your feet on this campus and not see what a lovely park-like setting. I will tell you, all those decades ago when I was here, Indiana State was a very urban campus. It's not anymore. It's got beautiful quad space, and it's very compact. So for a student to move around campus and get involved and engage, it really works pretty well for them.
Yeah, it's quite easy. And I feel like there's nothing quite like going and meeting face to face. I'm a little bit of an old soul, but I think there's nothing quite like that. You know, if you don't understand something or even just to get a feel of the faculty and the, I call it its own little community, come visit, right?
Absolutely. We believe that it's a unique experience in Indiana. We have a wonderful array of higher ed options in the state, but what Indiana State offers is, first of all, that mission tied to what the state of Indiana needs in the workforce. And secondly, this campus setting is unlike any of the others. So we think it's a real special fit for the right people.
It truly is. The right place, the right time. Can you tell us about a time that maybe you didn't reach a goal that you had for yourself or you thought about giving up? Can you think of a time like that and how did you get yourself through?
That's a very interesting question because I think back on a career and of course I began as a teacher, not only in the public schools, but then went into higher ed and teaching teachers, thinking that was my career before I moved into administration. And I can remember steps along that way, loving what I did, but not feeling that fire and passion that when you experience it, you know it. And frankly, that happened here at Indiana State. I came here to teach at the lab school. 1 year, it was on someone's maternity leave because I was just getting married and we lived in Paris, Illinois. Had my bachelor's, had my master's, which you need to have to teach at the lab school, and got that opportunity to have students in my classroom who were college students preparing to be teachers. And I can remember it was a pivotal point for me because very often a college student would come in my classroom, they'd have a lesson prepared. Sometimes because, and that's mainly what I taught middle school age students, it'd crash and burn. And I can remember just feeling deflated for those young people too. But here was the piece I learned that really has served me well, and I try to pass it on. We'd sit down, we'd analyze what took place, we'd insert a little bit of understanding of these young people, who's in this room and what are their interests, then to see them go back in and do it again. Don't walk away. Do it again. And then pretty much that simply experience success. That's what lit a fire for me. And I'd like to believe for those teachers to be, it lit a fire that you include new information, new evidence, and you go back at it again. You don't give up. You know, I often say yes as much as you can. But the other part is it isn't always going to turn out the first time the way you think. I'm a believer when you hit a barrier. Okay, so do I go over it? Do I go onto it? Do I go around the side of it? Do I have to get an air balloon? Do I have to get a helicopter? What is it I need to do? And go at it again. Seldom are those barriers so solid you can't figure out a way to do it.
I love that. Especially the air balloon. There's a will, there's a way, right?
Right.
That is so true. Do you or did you in the past have a female role model that you looked up to?
So I've thought about that over the years as well, especially as you reflect on women moving forward. And I would tell you, when I got into higher ed administration, not as a president, only 25% or so of presidents around the country were women. I'm delighted to tell you it's tipped up beyond that now. We're in the 40 range percent of women. But there were women along the way that my favorite example was a dean I worked for before I became a dean. She was a very lively spirit, but what I noticed about her, and I just adapted that self for myself, having worked with her, was she was always focused on bringing others with her. Always focused, and it was a natural thing for her. I have to tell you, I had to be intentional about it. I hope it's natural for me right now, but her name was Diane Ashby, and she was the dean of the College of Education at Illinois State. And I will tell you also, she was younger than I was. She was already in one of these significant roles, but she was one of these people who naturally would look at people coming along and say, you'd be better at this than I am, or here's what your strength is. So I often use the phrase, people who believed in me before I believed in myself. And I often get, what does that mean? That's what that means. When people see something in you, a leadership skill or a style or an ability, they point it out and that enhances it for you. Sometimes it actually, for the first time, draws your acknowledge of that, but it becomes building blocks. So I would say she was an incredibly significant role model for me. If you don't mind, I'll add one more.
Yeah.
Because I must say my mother. I must say in this. My mother was an at-home mom in the 50s and 60s as my brother and sister and I were growing up. And I clearly now remember that she so much wanted some kind of career beyond the home. My dad was a businessman, and his belief was, nope, my wife doesn't need to work. You know, there was a pride thing there. But I saw her frustrated not having another outlet, especially as we kids got older and became more independent. She taught piano lessons in the house. She actually started, it was a big deal in those days, a ceramic studio in our downstairs. She bought a kiln. She kept finding ways to tap her creativity and find fulfillment for herself, even though she was still the best darn stay-at-home mom I ever knew. And I think of women at that time who were saying, find what you're passionate about, and no matter how you need to do it, do it. So she was a great role model for me too.
But I love that your mom had that drive and that need to kind of find her place, and sounds like she really instilled that in you.
She truly did. She used to say all the time, you can do anything you want, go do it.
And I love your role model at the university as well, because I think, you know, there's nothing quite like a woman who, I mean, she didn't leave anybody behind. She wasn't like, you know, threatened any way, like they're going to take my job. She wanted you to come along with her. She wasn't leaving you behind. I think that's really special. And I think that's what this is all about. Women Mean Business, this thing that we're talking about and focusing on this month, is about women lifting other women. And I can't think of a better example than that, than your mother, and than you. So thank you so much for coming in, Dr. Curtis. It's been an honor, and it's been my privilege to meet you. And everything you've said is everything that we're kind of going for here. So,
well, it's a real delight to be able to have this conversation. Thank you so much for inviting me in.
Thank you.